welcome to The Last Horror Podcast. My name's Christopher Brown. Today I want to talk to you about genre. Now in particular, unsurprisingly, when we talk about this, I talk about genre quite a lot, don't I? Hence the name of the podcast. But something interesting's happened over the last few years. There's more discussion in terms of what is horror and why is it horror. So you get, for example, the writer Anton Bitel, who's a film critic who specialises in genre cinema, writing on the BFI website about the Fright Fest Festival and described 2016's Fright Fest lineup as being that not really horror is a highlight. Now, he uses that phrase rather cheekily, in truth. It's a bit of a clickbait headline, and it's a bit unfair, maybe. It's to entice the reader in, you know. Not really horror, the Fright Fest. What he actually says, of course, is that there's an ongoing discussion that horror films that kind of set themselves apart from genre, that don't necessarily possibly follow genre tropes, can be kind of seen in a slightly different way and kind of maybe pushed aside as in, you know, well, this isn't really horror. I think that story and that idea can probably be seen most clearly in Bret Easton Ellis's podcast when he did this quite lengthy chat with Eli Roth. And a year ago now, probably more. And they were talking about Goodnight Mommy, amongst other films like Babadook and It Follows. And Easton Ellis had put on his Twitter feed that, you know, art house horror was probably his least favourite genre at the moment, as if art house horror is a genre. And I think people go out their way. I mean, well, the first thing I'd say about that is there's a concept behind that, isn't it? If you say you make a genre, there's a suggestion that you actively set out to make a particular kind of movie. So somebody's kind of sat down and said, I will make an art house horror film. Now, I'm not convinced that's the case. I'm also a bit alarmed by the films that fit into that bracket, you know. Why is one film art house and another film is just mainstream trash, I suppose? To start the conversation, though, let's start off having a quick chat about one film, the one that, for some reason, riled Easton Ellis up so much. Goodnight Mommy. Now, have a little listen to, sadly, the Austrian trailer. It's an Austrian film.
Wer ist das?
Du bist nicht unsere Mama.
Bitte komm zurück, Mama. Ich mache alles. Jetzt kann sie uns nicht mehr auseinanderhalten.
Guten Abend, gute Nacht. Wir sind bei dir. Mit mir bleiben wir.
And originally called Ishi Ishi, Goodnight Mommy had been doing the rounds for a while. It's fair to say, in terms of film festivals, etc., etc. It only really got a proper release in the UK, 2016, early 2016. However, it'd been available in various fan subtitle torrent sites, etc., for a while before that, and indeed it's been appearing at various film festivals across the world ongoing. Now, written and directed by Veronica Franz and Severin Fiala, it's kind of like, it's a story about a mother who seems to have had some surgery, and her two twin sons, who are, for some reason, very offish, very strange, and very affected. There's obviously been some big event in the house that isn't spoken about. And it's slow build, it's very slow build. And then has an explosive third act. Now, I think the thing about this is that, you know, why is Goodnight Mommy particularly catching people's attention as being not quite horror or indie art house horror or whatever? And is it because the external scenes are shot in 35mm? It's directed by Veronica Franz. Obviously, you know, worked on Erik Siddall's Paradise Trilogy and Dog Days as well. And you know, Severin Fiala worked on Kern and Elephant Skin. So these are, you know, good films. These are, you know, classic art house films. So I suppose the thought is therefore that it's a film about, you know, with horror elements, torture elements, and it's been well shot. It's obviously it's genre cinema. It's, you know, it's about a family in one location. Then horrible things go down. So, you know, it fits snugly within the horror genre. It has, you know, it's slow moving. It's there's some absolutely beautiful shots in there. You know, the cornfields, the external shots of the home. All designed to kind of ramp up this feeling of uncanniness, of dread. I mean, it's not a film without its problems. It has its signposting issues, which either, you assume it's deliberate, but if it's not, it's really clumsy. And if it is deliberate, you're a bit like, well, I don't know if it's the best choice to signpost what's going on quite so quickly into the film. And, you know, horror fans and people who enjoy genre have a tendency to, you know, they've watched a lot of this stuff, so the cogs tick and they do kind of work it out quicker. You know, there's clever clever trick endings when you watched on Twilight Zone when you were a kid and something are only really clever trick endings because you've not seen it before, you know. And it has something. Goodnight Mommy has something specifically, and you know there's some general issues, but my God, it's a pretty film. To set it apart, though, to say this film is, you know, indie art house, instills it with something that, you know, them and us, anothering. I suppose a bigger example of this would be a film, The Witch, which, I think a lot of people watched it last year. It's a mixture of historical elements and the fact that everyone speaks in a kind of an old English kind of way. And, it's, you know, its use of very strange elements as well for witchcraft. So The Witch is about a family who end up kind of ostracized from the community and live by the woods. And they go completely mad. And the question is there a witch in the woods or not? Again, the film has massive signposting issues. Spoilers, if you've not watched it, give it a couple of minutes. If you're going to call a film called The Witch and have everyone arguing for the majority of the runtime about whether there's a witch or not, probably best not to have that witch screened at the end of the first act. Kind of, kind of jolts you a little bit in terms of, you know, all these people saying, what's going on? What can possibly be out there? Is there a monster in the woods? Don't be ridiculous. Well, you know, the audience know. They've seen the fucking thing, so they're already well up to speed. And obviously, you know, The Witch got a major theatrical release, and it did very well. And there was a suggestion that somehow these people had been tricked. That somehow, that by kind of, you know, well, the advertising or whatever, the trailer, you know, was pretty clear, but that its advertising would kind of trick people into going to see a film that they weren't expecting to go and see. God damn those Hollywood people, giving people an idea, you know, getting to watch something that might challenge them a little bit. Yeah, so there was a bit of a backlash about that. More strange, I think, is It Follows, which is It Follows is a Jamesian. I'm sure you've seen all these films. Well, it's, you know, for those who haven't, it's like a Jamesian horror film in terms of the fact that it has elements of Warning to the Curious, of a monster that continually follows and chases you down, and it plays around with horror tropes such as having sex when you're a teenager. And I would argue that's a horror film. That's just a standard horror film to me.
I used to daydream about being old enough to go on dates. I had this image of myself holding hands with a really cute guy, driving along some pretty road. It's never about going anywhere, really. It's having some sort of freedom, I guess.
Jay, you awake?
What are you doing?
You're not going to believe me, and I need you to remember what I'm saying.
This thing, it's going to follow you. Somebody gave it to me, and I passed it to you.
Wherever you are, it's somewhere walking straight for you. All you can do is pass it along to someone else.
I'm scared. I need to find him.
What did he really do to you?
Apparently, he used a fake name to rent a house in the city.
This isn't real, I swear to you. This is just some game.
If it kills her, it gets me and goes straight down the line whoever started it.
What exactly is supposed to be following you?
I don't know.
Something happened. It's not what she thinks, okay?
You don't believe me. Mom? No, it's me. Everything's okay.
It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. Whatever helps it get close to you.
But you know, at the same time, again, it's kind of with its with the fact that it's actually, you know, quite artfully shot, and that kind of gets me thinking. So, what are we really saying? Are we saying that a film like It Follows has pretensions of being something other than a horror film because the guy can shoot well? Because let's be honest with you, you know, early 80s Carpenter, 70s to 80s, mid 80s Carpenter is all incredibly well shot stuff. I mean, Halloween is a masterclass, not just in pace, but in how a horror shot is framed. Now, you can argue that one of the reasons why the slasher genre went off a cliff was because that, with the exception of, you know, well, with the exception probably of Nightmare on Elm Street, none of them are particularly well shot. They all kind of went the Friday the 13th route of just, you know, gore and young kids getting, you know, slashed up. Rather than, you know, that there's anything other than a horror film that kind of, you know, speaks to people in a different way or looks different. I think certainly a lot of these films are, and that we're talking about here, are horror films that are have a different perspective. So, you know, I could quite easily throw in three films, all directed by women. Probably some of the best horror films in the last couple of years, of The Invitation, which is a no-monster movie, shall we say, about a very awkward, contained, claustrophobic piece, which is all shot in a house, pretty much, apart from its intro, about people meeting together after a long time and something being off and wrong and what that might be. And is he, you know, are the people with suspicions right that something's off and wrong, or are they just wrong? Or there's Under the Shadow, which is a very traditional ghost story, but told in a non-traditional setting. And that non-traditional being 80s Iran, with a mother and her daughter being terrorized by something. And then there's The Babadook as well, which, all of which, you know, is about, again, about mother-child dynamic and emotions kind of forming to kind of create a creature or a monster. Now, I have to say, Babadook's not one of my favourites, but it has been incredibly influential. I mean, you know, Lights Out would not be Lights Out without Babadook. And I think anything that's kind of pushing filmmakers to create stories that are more than just well-paced horror with scares in the right points and actually have something to say is good thing. Although, as I've spoken up before about my worries and my dislikes about Lights Out when we were talking a while ago about it. Now, that's not to say that, you know, this concept of genre isn't a wavy thing to talk about. I mean, the film that sticks in the head was 2015's, I think it came out in the UK in 2016 again, early last year, Bone Tomahawk, with the Kurt Russell movie, about a gang of ragtag, I suppose, Western men who get together and effectively march or kind of travel on horseback through the same bit of Bat movie lot a lot and it seemed to end up where they shot Pet Sematary. So low budget horror films, kids. Use the same locations. And it is foreshadowed throughout the entire film that when they get to this place, it is going to kick off royally. But they feel like they are, you know, the white man against savages. So they'll probably be okay.
Lean back.
Right there.
Brace him. This is going to penetrate.
Good evening. Civilized towns, you look a man direct in the face when you talk to him.
This isn't comfortable.
Oh, it's not supposed to be.
There's a situation. Serious.
Mrs. O'Dwyer was abducted.
She is my everything, and those savages have got her. God knows what they're doing to her. Every second that we delay.
You know who did this?
I don't have a name.
How many of them do you think there are?
It won't matter. You have no chance against any number of them.
I'm coming with you.
No, I need you here.
And this is what a backup's for, to help an emergency, not stay back. I'm coming.
We're making a five-day journey in 3 days, riding along and sleeping the bare minimum.
I don't know what's west of here. No cattle trail or anything else goes in that direction.
If our horses die before we get there, or we go into hostile territory, weak and foggy with exhaustion, we won't rescue anybody.
Don't be scared. I am a friend.
You aren't.
You had no cause. If you want to question my morals, do it later.
Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts,
which we are about to receive.
You know, and it's overladen with doom. And I suppose the argument there is, this isn't a horror film. It's just got horrible things in it. That's like saying fucking The Wild Bunch is a horror film just because it's so violent. Or, you know, you could probably have a better argument with things like High Plains Drifter or Pale Rider. You know, both of which are films about an avenging person who, you know, may or may not be supernatural. And in their basis, it would say, you know, and as the Clint Eastwood character in both, which they're very similar in truth, but one's just more, you know, High Plains Drifter is just more extreme. You know, that it would be much easier to argue High Plains Drifter is a horror film than Bone Tomahawk, but no one does because it's got Clint Eastwood in it. Feels like a Western, you know, feels like one. But for some reason, because Bone Tomahawk has, you know, these you know, in the end has those horror tropes of people in cages, very, very brutal, violent, killing. That they kind of, you know, they're almost like, you know, well, of course it is. It has to be. And this film's, you know Mark Duplass created in 2014 Creep, which is a found footage movie about a very strange man who might or might not be very, very dangerous. And of course, the Duplass brothers made it, Baghead as well, which again, kind of, it's riffing on concepts of horror tropes and that kind of understanding of what is going on behind the scenes. I think it's fair to say that, you know, horror comedy tends to fall into it's just horrible, funny. And a film like Spring from 2014, and I'm throwing out lots of titles here, kind of mixes elements of romance and, you know, it's a love story, but there are, again, supernatural elements, but, you know, there are supernatural elements in Slash, but no one's talking about that being some horror film. I suppose they did speak about it being a fantasy, but again, I have problems with Spring, mainly because, the male character is beyond the most entitled character I've seen in a horror film in a long time. You know, it must be hard being so, being in a place mentally where everything's so difficult for you. But I suppose all what I'm talking about is there's two big threads here. One is a concept that there are films that are a difference to standard horror. You can't say mainstream horror because the concept of mainstream horror is ridiculous in itself as well. There isn't a pool, you know, mainstream horror is the James Wan movies, of which we'll get another one soon, I'm sure. You know, I'm sure there's another Insidious movie coming along, and, you know, there's another Conjuring spin-off movie featuring that, The Nun, which is weird. Weird, that's weird, isn't it? I think that's weird. I think, of all the characters, that is a crap one. A nun with a white face, who cares? Worse, you know, creepy doll movie. You can get on board with a creepy doll movie, but a ghostly nun. Anyway. Nonetheless, that is effectively, if And I say this very broadly, that is US mainstream as well. But it follows The Witch effectively is US mainstream. It had a major theatrical release. It did very well. That, by its very nature, is a mainstream movie. So these divisions already seem to be about something else, you know, something a bit different. Can it really be the idea that there's a concept that horror, by its very nature, must be defined by its slightly rough edges? Is Evil Dead... Well, Evil Dead's incredibly imaginative in terms of its shots, but feels like an American horror movie, so therefore is acceptable within that genre and isn't art house, despite the fact that it kind of is. It's certainly more intelligently put together than a lot of art, you know, a lot of horror movies. Or are we saying that, you know, in much in the same way, the slasher movie of the 80s is proper horror because it's generic, because it fulfills the criteria of a horror film? You can say the same thing about zombie movies. You know, it feels like Dawn of the Dead. It has people in one location. Things happen. Shit goes down. Man is the real problem and the issue. And then a resolution, either positive or negative. Because if that's the case, then what you're really saying is horror as a genre isn't that good, or doesn't have to be that good. I think it's something different. I think the arguments of not really horror or art house horror, and I know they're two separate things in a sense, you know, not really horror fits more in the mould of Spring or, you know, Bone Tomahawk or this year's The Love Witch, which is coming out in a few weeks in the UK, which is Annabella's next film after Viva, which was, I think it was 10 years ago now. That, you know, and The Love Witch and Viva are designed very particularly in terms of their set design and how they're shot, which is, you know, they are shot like 70s. They're shot like 70s films looking back on the 50s in truth, so it's quite bright technicolor. It has a certain feel and tone, and the actors act in a certain way. Viva, you know, they're long films, they breathe. They're proper 2-hour movies, and you spend a long time in that very unusual world. And I think that's great, you know, I mean, that's a great thing. But again, is that a horror film? Well, it involves a fucking witch. So, yeah, it is kind of, isn't it? It is. It's, you know, the Love Witch involves, you know, people get killed. And you know, and just because it has a different feel and tone to it, it can't possibly fall as not quite horror camp. Sorry, I've gone off on a tangent there, But when you say that kind of thing of art house horror or not quite horror, you're othering an element. You're saying this stuff's mine and that stuff's not. Now that's maybe a geeky, fanboyish kind of response to art. It's saying, and from my perspective, this stuff's for me and that stuff is not for me. So... And if we're going to go down that road, and I think maybe it is an American kind of concept in that sense. Because in Europe, we're kind of used to this kind of stuff, you know. Where does Suspiria fit into genre if it's not a horror film? You know, it's just really beautiful. Would Argento have classed himself as a film design for the art house? Almost certainly not. He certainly didn't with Inferno. Fulci, I mean, freaking hell, Fulci. His City of the Living Dead, The Beyond, the House by the Cemetery, that entire Gates of Hell trilogy. It's surrealist. It's odd. It's violent. You know, it's nightmarish, and it's a horror film. God, are there horror films? If they came out now, they would be classed as art house horror. If Polanski's The Tenant came out now, that's probably the same kind of thing. would Tetsuo, the Iron Man, be classed as art house? Because it's in black and white, and it's, you know, low budget and weird and strange. I mean, you know, the reason why that film exists in the format it does and the length it does is because of cash restraints and the sheer amount of work that was going into creating it. But at the same time, Tetsuo has to be, surely, an art house horror sci-fi hybrid. And let's not even get on to Takashi Miike, you know. So what am I saying? A good question. I think that the concept of othering certain movies, that's the pretentious horror film fans. Hello, obviously people like myself who, you know, write and talk at length about this kind of garbage. But that's, you know, that's for you. That's not for the kids, you know. Get the kids. They're all off watching Conjuring or the slasher films of their youth or the Italian re-releases that are so popular at the moment with horror fans of the stuff that they loved or they couldn't get to see when they were a teenager. You know, we 88 films put Joe D'Amato's Beyond the Darkness and his Absurd out on Blu-ray last week. You know, Absurd is a slasher film with a slightly supernatural stint on it, much like Halloween. And Beyond the Darkness is nuts, absolutely nuts, but great fun. But I won't spoil it by kind of going my way. But it is a film that is designed to offend, which is always good fun. I think good fair play for that idea. Yeah, so I think the concept of soup, you know, of of this othering is more based on how we see genre, us personally. You and me. I think as the ability to access stuff like, you know, unusual films from around the world has increased, then and as markets have opened up, international markets, in particular with the work of Netflix, but probably more so in fact with Shudder, who are are really picking some great films at the moment. But that Shudder is there's a lot of stuff, you know, it's deliberately curated. It's not like we are buying bulk or B movies, so you get like, you know, American Ninja 3, but not 2 and 1 and stuff, which seems to be the Netflix way at the moment. You know, just buying loads of stuff from MGM, basically, so you get loads of canon. Desperate still trying to make some of that stuff make cash. But no, I think Shudder is generally curating that experience, and because those worlds are open, so you can see that, you know, a wide variety of stuff. It's not necessarily just the stuff that's hitting your video shop, you know what I mean? That's released on video on demand that week. Or stuff that's, you know, on the cinema that week or whatever it is, so you end up watching, you know, the Ouija board sequel because what else is out that week, you know? Because of that, you can see, films that are distinctive, have a very particular tone of voice, that pierce through these concepts of what is a horror film or what is a genre film. You know, you can just watch them there and then, and that cannot be a bad thing. So, for me, I think my frustration, just to wrap this up, with art house horror as a concept, rather than just the films, or horror films, and the need to label and other these films with just because, you know, they've got a decent cinematographer on board, is that othering is damaging anyway. You know, I'm pretty sure those filmmakers didn't kind of go out, they went out the way to make interesting movies that they thought people would want to see that look good on a big screen. They didn't go out their way to, you know, make something that was, you know, this is for a very particular audience who was blah, blah, blah. You know, they're just making films. And that's just the films they want to make. When you create those kind of divisions, you close minds, you close people's avenues to great film. The greatest feeling in the world, and the thing I really love about modern film viewing, is that, you know, when I was growing up, it was, you know, you had to, if you need to get hold of videotape, you know, the films got passed around a lot. or, you know, you had to sneak into the cinema, which has its own challenges. But by the time you got to that screening, in the same way modern day, you know, with Star Wars or with Marvel movies, you know, you can see a lot of that stuff. You know, pretty much know what you're going to get before you go in. 4-minute trailers with the entire freaking thing on and all that stuff. And the pool of films was reduced, so you basically just sort out either things that were dead shocking or were like dead scary or, you know. Now, I went into The Invitation completely cold. I knew a bit about Under the Shadow, but, you know, and Goodnight Mommy, not a clue. Just knew, I just saw the picture of the mother with the bandages over her face. That was it. And it's introduced, you know, you're on that ride then. You're in the grasp of the director and the writers. You're on a journey that they are controlling. You're not guided by the fact that, and particularly with those, you know, art house horror films that try and create their own stories that don't follow the generics of a slasher movie or a found footage movie. They can guide you on particular journeys very well. And I think one of the reasons why people kicked back quite a lot against Goodnight Mommy was the fact that when they spotted the signpost and they'd be like, I was more hopeful that this would be, you know, bigger and broader and more intelligent than that. And I've spotted this and I'm going to see this all the way through this film now, which is going to do my head in. But you're in the, what I was saying is you're in the grasp and of those makers and that kind of journey where a film can just guide you through and you know nothing about it. Like, you know, it means that people at home can get the same pleasure and enjoyments as people who go to the film festivals and just watch 5 films and you don't know anything about them, and one of them just pops and go, wow, that was really striking. That was beautiful. I loved it. And that's the kind of stuff, you know, I personally think we should see more of. Okay. Well, hopefully you enjoyed that. I have a feeling that was quite rambly, but I'm not sure. We'll see how it works out in the edit. If you want to get hold of me, please do. My email address is christopher@thelasthorrorpodcast.com, or you can get hold of me on the website, thelasthorrorpodcast.com, where there's writing and stuff, all the podcasts and mixtapes. So if you go there, you can subscribe and I will email you out a compilation of songs for your Spotify playlist. If you like them, that would be good. This will blatantly be tinged this week by the kinds of soundtracks, the stuff we've been talking about. The It Follows soundtrack, which is very Carpenter-esque, but is excellent. I'm kind of hopeful the Prevenge soundtrack's available on Spotify now, because that's a great soundtrack as well. I should definitely get onto that. No doubt, you know, comedy horror, is it really horror? Again, you know, this kind of... But Prevenge is a wonderful film. And if you want to, you can support the show. Help pay for the hosting, because it's not a huge amount of money. It costs me less than Netflix to keep this great digital empire afloat. But, you know, or every penny helps. You know, if you want to buy me a beer or a coffee, that would be nice too. That's a lovely thing to happen. If you go to the Buy Me a Coffee button, click on that, it'll take you through to PayPal. And if you want to make a donation, that'd be great. If you don't, I ain't going to hold it against you. Next week we're going to talk about found footage and the fact that, interestingly enough, found footage has followed the exact same trajectory as slasher movies. And so we're going to talk about slasher movies in the 80s and found footage in the noughties and tens. Is that what people call it? In the 21st century. Now I think that is finally had its last roll of the dice. I think we are moving on from found footage now, which I think a lot of people will be quite pleased about, although I did enjoy them. Anyway, till then, take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.